Let's get into the actual meat of the lecture here and talk about what creates unethical evidence. And I'm going to say there's really four drivers of unethical evidence that I think everybody should be aware of and really try to guard against. An unhealthy overemphasis on winning, you know, ultimately trying to find that magic card that will, you know, get your case. You don't care so much about debate. You're more concerned about actually winning those rounds. You don't get those cards in there and out there. And, you know, some teams will cut corners because they're more concerned about winning than they necessarily are about anything else. So I think we've got to guard against that. Probably maybe a more common way that evidence is falsified is through lazy research or carelessness. Not necessarily looking at the whole contents of an article, just grabbing, you know, saying, oh, we're looking for this piece of evidence. Boom, there it is in the article. Let's not examine what the article is actually saying in context as a whole. Let's just grab this little nice little soundbite out of it, and it may or may not be, you know, necessarily reflecting what the whole article says. Or, as we just saw earlier, maybe missing the original publication when you go to the website and getting a copyright date or something like that. A third way that evidence frequently ends up being falsified is by novice debaters who just quite honestly don't really know any better and you know, may be quoting things incorrectly and or be cutting stuff out of context or whatever. And unfortunately what happens is a lot of times that evidence, as our next point says, gets recycled through evidence rinks. That reinforces why it's very important that you check all the evidence that you get whenever you trade from somebody. So what are some costs of bad evidence? And one of the points that I'm making in this lecture is there can be evidence that is skirting on the edge of being falsified. It's just, we'll just call it shady evidence, bad evidence. You know, it's not impeccable, just has a little minor thing wrong with it. But even just having that one minor little thing wrong with it can be significant enough and should be really considered. You know, your reputation's at stake. Imagine if you were to trade somebody a brief that had falsified evidence in it, and they were to use that brief and get in trouble in a round. I mean, whoa, that would kind of hurt. That would chill your relationship with that person real quick. You know, there, and especially as you go later on in life, there and out even in out of home schools and stuff like that. You know, lax research can result in very severe academic penalties. It's very interesting how even in a lot of secular schools, how a lot of what we might consider basic ethics is not necessarily punished in a context like that. But when it comes to academic integrity, things like falsification, plagiarism, whoa, that can get you tossed out of most colleges in the U.S. pretty much automatically. So it has some very severe academic penalties that are associated with this type of behavior long term. And as we know from, actually I think it's in maybe the NCFCA rules or judge's manual, you can lose a round. The judge has the discretion to vote against you in the round if you falsify evidence. It can get result in you being tossed out of a tournament, disqualified, all sorts of stuff. And really, I don't think it's good for you as an individual to realize that the only way that you can legitimately compete is by twisting evidence. You know, I think you're doing yourself a disservice if you're doing that as well. So most common evidence problems. Let's go back here. So we've kind of talked, I think I'm mentioning five of these, and I think we've hit some of these in previous lectures. There's omissions, additions to evidence, distorting primary intent, ignoring qualifications and dates. So we have omissions, big common one there is ellipses, additions, you know, inappropriate brackets or something like that, and there's a couple more things that Coach Vance has showed us on his lecture, distorting what the author is trying to say, ignoring qualifiers in the evidence, and then dates are now a very interesting area where falsification is occurring a good bit. So let's look at each one of these, ellipses, omissions. I think you guys have pretty well got my opinion on underlines and ellipses. Everybody knows what ellipses are, those three little dots that you see all the time. Now, a lot of times, evidence will have ellipses in it, just in the article. For example, they may quote someone and use ellipses in the quote. So you may have ellipses in the original. That should, you know, you should make a note on the evidence, ellipses in original. And that's not necessarily inappropriate at all. But you need to make that note so your evidence doesn't look wrong there. Yes, question?
Oh, okay, that's what, just what I was going to say. Is if you run that because somebody, they ask what's in the ellipsis, you just say that it was in the original?
Yeah, you should have that on your site. At the very end of your citation, just have in parentheses, ellipses in original, so that they know that when they're looking at that. And we were actually looking through the Blue Book Advance the other night at evidence with ellipses, and we had a lot of evidence that actually had ellipses in the original articles, and that we added those things on. And by the way, we have removed all ellipses from the Blue Book Advance and from all. We don't use ellipses at all on our publications, just because we think they're a place where abuse can occur. Now, I think everybody pretty much knows this, but so because we want to hand out some of my 380 pieces of bubble gum, somebody tell me why using ellipses, why that can result in falsifying evidence. It's not that hard a question. Tell me your name, sorry.
Sarah.
Thought you're Sarah. Sarah, what's the answer?
Because people could assume that you were taking the evidence out of context and putting out a piece that might go against your case.
And this is again, okay, good. And just to clarify, so ellipses allow you as a debater who's reading the evidence to do what? To skip over stuff. So stuff you're skipping over may definitely be harmful to your case. So use underlines instead. I think how many teams have used underlines in their evidence for briefs they've written on assignments? Yeah, pretty much. I think we've been using that pretty extensively. I know one example we had with our probably most legendary card from this camp, which is our evidence on CAFE saying that it reduces job losses or helps the economy or whatever it says. It was like a two-page article, instead of using ellipses, there were multiple underlines pulled from that piece of evidence, which when you see it in the book, you can see what we're talking about.
No, the one that you made me put in.
Oh, and we have another one in the nuclear case that's pretty long, too, to prevent ellipses.
It added 4 pages.
So we had a massive card, but we used underlines, yeah. Now, if you're going to use ellipses, now I'm not saying never use ellipses, but the only time you would ever probably want to use ellipses is if there's like a 40-page gap in the evidence. Now, somebody tell me why you might not want to, why a 40-page gap might be a problem in and of itself with a piece of evidence, just as a bad piece of evidence in general. Shane, what do you think?
There's just so much material in between the statements. I mean, it's just not going to make sense.
Yeah, that's just kind of pulling a sentence you like here and a sentence you like there and just kind of writing. That's almost writing your own evidence, even though you may be doing what they say. That's right, yeah. Yeah, as debaters talk for writing your own evidence, kind of there. So yeah, that's a good point. Nathaniel, you have a point?
Let's say you go on like GA or whatever, and there's 25-page report, but there's some pretty good cards like set up sporadically throughout the whole thing. You just suggest printing the whole report off, and if they want to see it, or would you just make separate tags?
Right? Probably just grab separate cards, right? Separate cards. That's another solution to that. So yeah. Now another thing. This is a good thing just to be thinking about when you're reading and when you're analyzing material. We've talked a lot about footnotes this week and some of the research lectures and how that's a great place to get information. And I think Coach Sparks talked about how footnotes are very valuable. Now, one of the things just for you as a reader, I mean, how many people have ever read a book with footnotes before? Everybody. Okay. Now, and how many people, and I'm not going to ask this because you probably don't remember, but a lot of the people, they're using quotes for footnotes. They may have ellipses in their quotes. Well, and I've seen this in some examples of some fairly, I guess, probably popular books, maybe in the Christian community that, are circulating out there, where, in a footnote, you generally give the page numbers that the quote came from. Like, may say page number 4 through 23 or something like that, or 4 through 5. So if they use ellipses in a specific quotation, and then you go down to the footnote and it says pages 4 through 165, what that's telling you is the first part came from page 4, the second part on the other side of the ellipses came probably from page 145. And that may be an indicator of some sloppy scholarship within that footnote. And that's just a good thing for you to think of as a reader, kind of an outside of debate. So we've hit ellipses pretty good. Let's talk about brackets. Brackets or additions. And again, whenever you're adding brackets or adding ellipses, you should always put brackets added at the end of the citation just so that people know where those are. Now, brackets can actually be, let's just explain this, because I don't really think we've maybe seen an example of this. Why, what would be an example of using brackets to falsify evidence? How would you use brackets to falsify evidence? Yes?
Just stick in like a little phrase or whatever at the beginning of the card or whatever to sort of the author's meaning.
Maybe you're trying to clarify something, and really you don't understand what you're talking about, and you have a bad clarification job. So you're trying to clarify it, but you don't really know, you misinterpret the article, and through the bracketed material, you misinterpret the intent. But at the same time, I think there are definitely times when you should be using brackets. If there's a pronoun in a piece of evidence that you read, you should clarify with brackets who that pronoun refers back to. Never have a piece of evidence that said, He said that this policy should be implemented immediately tomorrow. Clarify who that he is within the context of the quote, and use brackets to do that. To provide more complete information, a lot of times in journal in a newspaper, the first time they refer to someone, they'll use their full name. Then after that, of course, they'll use their last name. But when you come and use that second quote where only the last name is used, you should use brackets to clarify what that exactly means, and maybe even put in credentials for those people there as well, so that you can make that evidence more communicative to the judge and more persuasive to the judge. Okay. And another way to use additions that I think Coach Vance particularly stressed that I don't really want to go into too much, additions, adding additional things to a card. And in that case, quote marks can be essential to show what's actually evidence, a quote at the end and a quote at the beginning. And that's one of the rules that we have, I guess, at Research Camp on our briefs, is we do not want any summaries after evidence saying the impact of this is blah, or this means blah, your interpretation at the end, because that can be intermixed in with the evidence in the future, and that can lead to problems, even just accidentally. Yes? Right, definitely have evidence as impacts. A piece of evidence is an impact, but don't necessarily write your own impact in right after a piece of evidence. Or have a piece. That's what the tag is for. You should use the tag to explain to the judge what the evidence is about, not a little thing at the very bottom. So yeah, I think everybody knows that. Okay, let's talk about a third means of falsification, distorting primary intent. Affirmative evidence from article. Now, there's kind of two big tip-offs on this. One is you look at the article name and then look what the card is saying. If we have affirmative evidence from an article entitled Cap and Trade Fails, probably that's distorting the author's primary intent. So that's what the article name generally can tell you. Another really classic tip-off to this, and this may contribute to several dozen falsified cards every year in NCFCA, is the card will say something like, some people believe that some people believe that desertification is a major problem to the United States and to the world and results in X, Y, and Z bad thing happening. And then the author goes on in the rest of the article to refute why that's true. But the fact he uses some people believes, that oftentimes kind of excludes the author himself. So those kind of indicators can indicate the evidence being taken out of context. Yes? Mm-hmm. So he may state something and then again. So most of that is generally if you only look at the beginning of the article instead of looking at the conclusion and the end, that can create those type of problems. Let's see. When to use... When to use evidence. So should you ever use evidence that does not come from an individual who supports your entire plan? You should use it sparingly. I don't know if we're doing it too much in this camp. I think I've maybe cut the one out that I've seen so far. Not that it's bad, but it can be good to say, hey, even people that are advocates and believe this position also, you know, maybe aren't as extreme as the AFT team is, to kind of mitigate some of the AFT team's claims. Of course, that should always be disclosed when you read the card that the individual being cited is actually a supporter of the other side. But that's not necessarily wrong to do. Again, it must be disclosed. To say something like even opponents of this plan concede that, then you could read a card that even though the article's conclusion may be different than what you're saying, you could make that point there. But that has to be disclosed, and I would warn you against that in most cases because it's kind of skirting on the grounds of unethical right there, or at least can easily become unethical. Okay, ignoring qualifiers. I think this is something we really haven't talked about that really happens a good bit in evidence as well. And again, is this evidence that's falsified so badly you take to the tournament director? Probably not. This is probably something more that becomes a debate in the round, but it's the way that evidence is falsified. A lot of evidence is going to say things like normally, generally, often, frequently, significant, something like that. You know, not an all-inclusive statement, but the app is, or the one of the teams is going to tag that article. You know, desert, let's go back to our desertification example. Desertification creates sandstorms. That's what the evidence is tagged as. And the quote could say something like, normally, desertification is associated with sandstorms. Does that evidence say desertification causes sandstorms? No, it says it normally causes sandstorms. So it's basically taking a specific statement and broadening it out to a universal statement. And that is definitely another major area of evidence that you have to be very careful of. Okay, let's go to, I think, my final type of evidence falsification that we want to hit in an orderly fashion here, and that's dates. The access and updated must be read. You cannot ignore those and around. Now, somebody explain to me what those mean. What is access? When we see access, what does that mean? Accessed August 10th, 2009, what does that mean? I think I saw Chad's hand up first here.
Okay, so access means that that's when you found the article, when you accessed it the day that you copied it and put it into a cart. Updated means when the...
Just tell me what access means. I'll give you credit for that. Good job. What does updated mean? Elaine. Or maybe even when the publication itself was revised on the website. Yes, but you need to know what those means, because those do not mean that is the date it was actually published. The other thing here is copyrighted does not equal necessarily date published either. A lot of times the copyright will keep changing so that it'll be the most recent year. At the bottom of a lot of websites, it says copyrighted 2008, 2009, something like that. That's not necessarily a legitimate date to quote a date off of. It needs to generally be at the very top of the article or something like that. Yes. If you cannot find any other date and you have to use the copyrighted date, you definitely need to disclose copyrighted that. And basically what I should be signaling to the other team is this evidence, the best date we have on this evidence is copyrighted 2008, but we don't necessarily know when this came from. So, and they can challenge you on that potentially. And you can say, you can disclose to them so you didn't do anything wrong, but your evidence is maybe not as strong as it could be if you actually, and you again have to put copyrighted as a statement there because that doesn't necessarily equal a publication date. Another thing, okay, we've talked, everybody knows about how to date an article. An ND, if you see a lot of actual more scholarly publications, an article that doesn't have a date, they'll put ND in the place where a date would normally go, in something like an MLA or University of Chicago reference style. One way to date an article that doesn't have a date readily available in the article is to look for dates with like a control F search. How many people have done that? So good, everybody's pretty much got experience doing that at this camp. Google for a reprint of the article, or maybe look at the context. If it says, September 11th has taught us many things, well, we know it's from after 2001. If it says, Barack Obama, we're glad that Barack Obama is now president, we know it's from probably after 2008, maybe even after 2009. Okay, how to protect yourself from shady evidence. You should check all cards in briefs that you trade for, and check the cards in the briefs that you trade for. Another point that I wanted to make about source books, Coach Sparks made a point this morning. He said, you know, you should check even source book evidence sometimes for accuracy. And let me just throw in another plug that I kind of wanted to toss in this morning. I think it's great, even if you're not looking for accuracy, to go check a source book article, because maybe by reading the article that the quote comes from the source book, you can gain more broader knowledge about the subject. You know, just don't read the source book with little quotes, but use that source book productively to go back, look at those articles, see if maybe the source book doesn't get everything good out of there, or if maybe you can learn a little bit more by reading the context of the article. It's kind of an educational tool. Another way this happens a lot of times, and I have actually seen this happen before, we're in a big outround, a team, you know, and outrounds, everybody, even people you don't know sometimes, offer you their evidence, right? They're like, hey, could you use my brief? Would you like to use my brief? And it's so great because you feel like, oh boy, everybody likes me. They want to let me use their briefs and all that. And everybody likes to have the team that's up in the outround accept their briefs and, you know, all that. I would just kind of caution against accepting evidence at the last minute like that because you've never looked at it before. And even if you know the people really well and they're your best friends, they're humans too. They could have made an honest mistake that you could be reproducing. And another thing that can happen when you use other people's evidence, if they were to use it, they may not have used it in an incorrect manner. Because you're not familiar with the context of the articles because you've never read them before, and they have read them, you may use the evidence in a way that the article didn't intend it or is out of context for that article. So they may be able to use it correctly, and when they use it, it may not create falsification. This has actually happened in college a couple times with some teams where novice teams used evidence that a varsity team cut, and the novice team didn't know it really how to use the evidence correctly, and they ended up using it incorrectly just because they weren't familiar with it. So that's a point. Chad?
One other thing after that is what Matt said is correct, but also at regionals, Jesse and I got a brief from someone against the final round against Bruno Stevens' app case. And it didn't even help us because it was something new. We didn't even know what was in the brief. So it's not helpful to really accept evidence that you haven't.
Those briefs, yeah, generally sometimes aren't the most helpful. But this definitely from an... So, yeah, there's a couple caveats to those, you know, free evidence briefs that you get right at the in out rounds. And another point that I say, and again, we've been trying to encourage this here too, no one-line quotes. Cut evidence with more context than you need so that, again, you can remember what that context was. Because when we're cutting thousands and hundreds of cards over the course of the season, I guarantee you, you will forget some of the context of your evidence by the time you actually end up using it during the competitive season. Okay. How to impeach evidence. So somebody uses a piece of falsified evidence against you. You as a smart researcher know that. How do you go about, you know, demonstrating that in a round to the judge and really using that? And I have a couple things I want to make here. Some of the points, slides that I'm going to get into next, I have put some personal opinion into, so I'll disclose that. And so they're good discussion slides, potentially. Assume the best. Always assume the best. If a team is using evidence incorrectly, don't assume it's because, you know, they're dishonest and they want to win or whatever. You know, maybe one of the worst motivations for falsifying evidence. You know, just assume maybe it was because of carelessness. Don't go after the person. Evidence falsification is generally always a matter of degrees. Very rarely do you see a card that is so blatantly fabricated that, you know, it's just shocking. Generally, we're doing things like taking out qualifiers, things like that, you know, that are just, you know, kind of minor, but they're very important. And I have down here every card is taken out of context, so to speak, and some people may use that argument to justify bad evidence, and it's really not an argument to justify bad evidence. But, you know, whenever you cite a card and you don't use the rest of the context in the actual round, to some extent that card is being taken out of its context, literally speaking. So that's something to bear in mind, too. Maybe the person, if they were asked questions, could explain that a little bit more. And don't use this as an opportunity for an ad hominem attack. I think I just gave you my personal opinion about this up the other night. Attack the evidence, not the person or the team. Always give the other team an out. Like what we always like to do before we try to impeach somebody on evidence is we ask them a clarifying question in cross-examination. So your evidence said this, and give them a chance to say, oh, no, it didn't really say that. You know, give them an opportunity to get out of it. And, you know, that's just kind of a generous thing you should maybe try to do to the other team to give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they misread skipped the evidence when they were up there reading it, and they just, you know, it was a matter of haste. The point here is to be a truth seeker, not to get teams disqualified from the tournament. And I've seen some teams that literally went into debate rounds, I think, with the goal of getting the other team thrown out because their evidence... by finding falsified evidence. Teams that use that as a strategy. And I say never use the cheap shot to win. Understand that novices always give an extra measure of grace to novice and first-year teams. They will inevitably use evidence incorrectly. That's to be expected. They should learn the lesson, but again, that's not a reason to you know, get them thrown out of a tournament or, you know, lose the round or necessarily. Yes?
Let's say that between rounds and preliminaries, you check up evidence that sounded fishy, and it turns out that it was taken out of context or one of these.
Yeah.
What is the procedure? Do you go to tab or tournament directory?
I would go first, and I think let me see what my next slide is here. Okay, no, so what first thing I would do, seriously, the first thing I would do, if I found a piece of evidence like that, I would go to the other team. I think that's the right thing to do. Go to the other team and say, hey guys, you know what? I was looking at your evidence that I thought was so amazing during the round, and to me it looks like this is taken out of context. You know, what do you guys think about that? And get their opinion on it. Maybe, I don't know. But I would say go to them first. Talk to the other team first. And, you know, that is always the best way to handle things. Don't go to their coach first. Don't go to their parents first. Don't go to the tournament director first. Go talk to the other team. If the other team refuses to listen to you about it, you might want to take it to the tournament director or to their coach maybe next, if they have a coach. And I know in homeschool debate, coaches are a little bit hard to figure out who, you know, parents. Sometimes teams don't seem to so much have a coach. But if they have a coach, I'll go talk to their coach next. Then talk to your coach, too. If you have a coach, that would be probably the order of things I would do. Is first thing I would do is go talk to my coach. So talk, if your parents are your coach, talk to your mom if she's considered your coach, your dad. Some teams, if you have a formal coach, talk to your coach first. Maybe it's another debater in your club, talk to them. Then go talk to the other team. Then go talk to the other team's coach. Then talk to the tournament director. You should never go to the tournament director first. Just give make sure we have everybody understands what's going on. Is always a good thing to do there. Okay, this is two kind of approaches to, you know, impeaching evidence. Kind of extreme here, but I want to give them as examples. The affirmative team took this out of context, so we should win. The best way to do that is the card read by the AF team fails to include certain information which we believe is relevant to this round, and give what they left out. Another way to do it: this evidence is riddled with ellipses, so it is so suspect we know the AF falsified it. Say before we evaluate this evidence, we would appreciate if the AF would provide us with a complete copy of the article. Only then can we ascertain the true intent of this card. That's a much more graceful way to go about making that as an argument. Again, attack the evidence, not the debaters. Did I see a hand in the back? Okay. Evidence falsification of voting issue. This is more from a judge's perspective, and I think we had a good discussion about this the other night. I say, from a debater, you should not have, and I've actually, one of the things, my first year at Nationals was actually when I was a first-year debater. And we got a wild card slot. We were really lucky. And we went up, the first round, we went up against a team from Clash. Actually, it was a varsity team from Clash. Now, how many people know who Clash is? Clash is probably one of the best clubs in the United States. They've always been one of the best clubs. So, actually, as soon as we saw that we were against, like, Clash, K, somebody else, we were freaked out, and I mean we were freaked out like crazy because we had heard about how great California teams were, and we were scared to death. So we go into the round, and they're running like some sanctions case, and we had some evidence against it, but legitimately we probably didn't put up the best debate against it. But at the end of the round, the team got up, and they ran these reverse voting issues against us. They said, you know, this team, you should vote against, you shouldn't just vote for us, you should vote against them because they ran topicality against us. You should vote against them because they made a really sloppy argument here. You should vote against this team because they did this. And it was like, whoa, we felt really kind of crushed at the end of the round because, quite honestly, they were a much better team than we were, and they killed us in the round. They really didn't need to do that, and that was just kind of, you know, rubbing it out there. So I say, as a debater, you know, that's not something I would be campaigning for, that you should vote against the other team because they did this, this, and this. Sell yourself. And again, use that as a reason to show why the other team's arguments are flawed, not as a reason to vote against the other team as like a personal issue. Point out evidence what'd you say? We got killed. We lost. We were legitimately defeated by a much better team. So anyway, point out the evidence problems to the judge in the round, but don't necessarily call for a vote on it. Leave it up to the judge. If the judge wants to vote on it, let him do that, but you know, you don't necessarily call for it. I say use evidence misrepresentation as a refutation point. You can say, well, you know, we believe this evidence is, we should win this point because their evidence actually supports us as opposed to them. We debated a team from, I think it was like University of Dayton. Nobody knows who they are probably, so we're good. And the University of, there was a team that, they weren't their varsity team, they were probably like junior varsity level, and they had this disadvantage that they left, it was about brain drain in Africa. And they cut the card up to say that it was a disad on our H-1B visa case. They cut the card to say that by taking H-1B workers out of Africa, we would create a medical crisis and people in Africa would die. But they left out a key part of the article that said that one of the problems with medical care in Africa was there were too many doctors, there was too over medication in Africa. They needed to take out. There was a shortage of nurses, not of doctors. There were too many doctors, or something like that. So for doctors to make any money, so they weren't. It was discouraging them. So instead of saying, "Oh, we have a piece of evidence here that they falsified that we should win the round on," we said, "Actually, their disadvantage is self-refuting because if we look at this section in the card, it says just the opposite and proves that you should vote for us." And we use that to refute the disadvantage. We won that round. So that was not the best team. It was a junior varsity team. It was a round between a junior varsity team and a varsity team. So they were kind of it wasn't the fairest matchup. Anyway. Why should judges do about evidence falsification? This is, you know, you're not a judge, but you probably will be a judge someday later on. So, and again, I'm just claiming this is my personal position. I think you can reach other legitimate positions here. As a judge, if you find a team that uses the two types of evidence that I would potentially vote against a team for and turn them into the tournament director for, the one time I would do that is I was debating a varsity level team, a very experienced team, that did one of two things. They took context out of a piece of evidence, like they used ellipses to cut out a very important part of the evidence. This had just the opposite, or if they inserted with brackets something in there that the evidence clearly did not say, or added wording into the evidence that was not there. Those would be maybe three instances. If a varsity team did that, I would turn them into the tournament director and vote against them in the round. Otherwise, if it involves the truth of a major voting issue, for example, we have a clash between two pieces of evidence and they falsified a piece of evidence, I'm going to vote neg or aff on that or whatever, and give lowest possible speaker points to the other team. And if it fails to involve the truth of a voting issue, I'm not going to vote on it, but I'm going to give the other team like a 1 on speaker points and make a major note on that on the ballot. And I probably would not vote on evidence problems not identified in the round. Why would I not vote on evidence problems not identified in the round? Because, and I'm not necessarily asking that so much as a question, more because I think the other team should be given a chance to respond to that, and it's not fair for me as a judge to say, oh, I think this evidence is flawed without hearing the other team's explanation for why it may be in fact correct. Now, what if the judge doesn't vote on a piece of evidence? What if the evidence was clearly falsified and the judge didn't vote on it? And I mean, we're talking major falsification, like a varsity team left out a key part of the article. And I say, really, what we were talking about earlier, I think Matthew 18:15 says that, you know, the first thing you should do is go talk to your brother about that. Talk to the other team first. Express your concern. Listen to their perspective. There may be something that you're missing in this whole point here. I would take a humble attitude about this. And although they may deny the problems, if you go to a team and they may be scared and deny the problems, my guess is they won't use that evidence anymore just because they're probably scared to death of it anyway. So that's kind of a check there. And warn other teams in your club. That's a good way to check evidence abuse too, is if you know a team that's running shady evidence, warn other teams from your club that are going up against it to look out for that. And that can result in that team being ultimately nailed down. Now, has anybody here ever been accused of misusing evidence in a round? Okay, some people. Actually, in a round, the team got up and said that. Yeah, so if you have a lot of evidence, generally that happens. If somebody gets up and says, you know, and in the round, they say, hey, the other team has, you know, falsified your evidence, whatever. The first thing, that becomes like what's an a priori voting issue? What's an a priori issue in debate? A priori. Got three, saw your hand up first.
Something you must address immediately.
Sort of. Okay, yeah. Priority, right? No, okay. Give me some other examples of a priori voting issues. What's another example of what we consider an a priori voting issue?
Like if someone accuses you of dropping an argument that you didn't drop?
I was thinking of two that, not so much. I was thinking of two that are generally considered a priori voting issues. Topicality is an a priori voting issue. You should come up at the top of the, that's why it's in the 1AC. There's another one too that's an a priori voting issue. Yes.
Significance?
No. Significance is not an a priori voting issue. Something else. Yes. No. And one more guess. I saw Lane's hand up. No, prima facie. Prima facie and topicality are two a priori voting issues. The same way, this is an a priori issue. The first thing out of your mouth, the next speech, when somebody accuses you of falsifying evidence should be to clarify and respond to that allegation. Do not let that sit. I would say offer, the other team gets up and says that, offer the other team to see the full article if you have it. Offer them additional information about the card. Express to the judge that your evidence is always available after the round. Call their bluff. I've had teams do this multiple times. They get up and they actually miscite our evidence. Like we give them the evidence during cross-ex. They get up and accuse us of falsifying it and they misread it. Like literally, the stuff that we gave them, they misread it. We get up and say, hey, judge, they're accusing us of falsifying evidence and they're up here misreading our own cards. Look at what this says. Look at this after the round. It actually says what we say it says. Yes.
Just for a note, you can't actually offer for the judge within the speech to look at it after the round, but you can say, and this is what a lot of people do, you can say, as a judge, you can ask for the evidence after the round.
I think you're saying you can't offer them the evidence at like during the speech, or I'm pretty sure you can say.
Like directly after.
Oh, you can't go up to the judge and say, here's our evidence. Yeah, you can't go up to the judge and say, you know, hey, look at our evidence. Look at our file. We had a funny case once where at our regional tournament in octafinals, the team actually offered all three of the judges a copy of the 1AC 15 minutes before the round started.
Which you can't do.
Yeah, which is kind of not ethical. Yes. Why? You don't have to ask me, did I win the round? Like, I mean, not nothing about me, but that's not the first question we need to ask on some things like that. So, anyway. We've lost rounds before, okay? Let's put it that way. Yes, Hannah.
Just a comment on that. Like, I've had it happen where teams off, they're like, I don't have time to read this evidence, so as a judge, you can read it after the round. I would say that's not the proper way to use that. Like,
oh, yes. That's the phantom evidence that we were talking about last night.
Yeah, offer the judge evidence if after that, if there's a clarity issue, but not like, I don't have time to read it, so you can read it later.
Right. And what I'm saying is, what you should be, the, you should offer the judge evidence that you've already read. You say, judge, if you doubt the way this evidence looks, we have the full article at the bench. We have the full card at the bench. You can, it's within your priority, prerogative to look at them after the round. But make that clear. I think judges like to hear the fact that you are very, that makes you sound transparent, and judges like that. And they may not, they may, you know, that's one way to kind of call the other team's bluff. And as a strategy, and actually I have, there are, and I'm sure there's some teams who do this in high school, but I know in college there are teams, there are squads whose that's their main strategy is to find, they are trying to impeach teams' character by accusing them of evidence falsification in the course of the debate round. And as a strategy, that is very unethical. If that's your goal, is to assassinate the other team's quality or character in the round by using a strategy like this, that's not good. So anyway, okay. Now we're going to look at a couple examples to wrap this up here. Okay. Example number one. What is wrong with this card? What is this an example of?
These
are falsified cards, so you won't find them online. The whole evidence is made up. But what is wrong about this falsified card, this, you know, fabricated card? Yes, Joseph.
The URL, would it be on the main page, the front page of that URL?
We'll just assume that's right. We're not. The citation is correct, I think. Just somebody tell me. Well, we got a lot of hands. I didn't even see who raised their hand up first. What do you think, Billy?
I think we need credentials on John Doe's.
No, we're not concerned about citation. What do we think, Shane, what would you say?
Some would say.
Could right. Is this author, does John Doe go on through the rest of the article to say
yes.
that, and certain experts even maintain?
It's kind of vague.
Well, the problem with this is not a statement where he's making a factual claim. He's making a claim about what people say, not about what the facts are. So you can't read a piece of evidence like this to say the facts are this. This is saying all he's making the claim of is people say this. So, and a lot of evidence actually looks like that. How many people have maybe seen a piece of evidence that looks like that before? Yeah, it's a fairly common piece of evidence, and technically that's a fabricated piece of evidence. Shane, here's a piece of evidence, or piece of candy. Man, maybe we should start giving out evidence at the next camp. Yeah. We just have pieces of evidence that, you know, we randomly distribute. I'll have, you know, next research camp, I think that's what I'm going to go for is evidence. So. Yeah. Like an IOU? Oh man, I would hand out about two or three of those during the course of the entire camp. Yeah, we would be handing out a lot less stuff there. Okay, next card. Nuclear energy is safe. Nuclear energy is safe. A terrorist attack on a nuclear power plant has never occurred in the U.S. Okay, let's see. Margaret, what do you think?
Me.
Yeah. You're Margaret, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you think? Yeah, you cannot cut qualifiers out of a card like that, and that's an inappropriate use of underline. Let me tell you, this happens. People think, "Oh yeah, we're gonna power underline this piece of evidence, and we're gonna take this out." Ooh, that's pretty serious taking that out. You can't take those modifiers out there. Here's a piece of candy. Do you have something else, Guthrie?
Grammatical errors.
Oh.
This may have been just yours, but nuclear waste is very hard to dispose of it.
Where is it? Nuclear is very hard to dispose of it. Now, does that sound like evidence a debate a expert would write? Probably not. Okay, good job. Here you go. Anybody else? Hannah.
I just want to say that the card is power tagged. I mean, I know they changed the card to do that, but they did power tag it, like, took out the word and then power tagged it.
Power tagging evidence. Yes, that's an example of power tagged card. Okay, what's wrong with this card right here? Yes, Chad.
Professor John... and of Harvard, nowhere does it say that he is actually that. And it's in brackets, and it doesn't have brackets added anywhere.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you, for not having brackets added, that's true. Say I put brackets added in there, though. Would this be a legitimate card, or would there be something wrong with it? Yes.
Another thing, and colleagues. He doesn't list who the colleagues are.
Okay, we could maybe put that in if we really wanted to explain that. Okay, somebody else, yes.
It's kind of maybe a general sweeping statement at the very end, in addition, it agrees with everything we know about DDT.
This is just an amazing piece of evidence. This is just an amazing piece of evidence.
Yeah,
okay.
That's
just an amazing, this is just a great card. Okay, it's like the best card ever on DDT that's ever been fabricated. What do you think, Hannah? Wait a minute, okay, what do you got?
Well, I think...
You're next.
Personally, I want them to not add the study into bracket, because a lot of articles say, this study, so that's just a personal thing.
I think it might be good to clarify what study is. Cameron, what do you think?
Well, the situation says that DDT is safe, and just doesn't say it's just safe.
Okay. There's no negative, says it poses no negative health effects in the card, in the falsified card.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Anything else? Anybody think this is a legitimate piece of evidence with brackets added? Nobody. Man. You think it's, okay, we kind of gave a hit there. Yeah, this is actually the piece of evidence I was throwing in. Do you have another point to make about why it's a bad piece of evidence?
It doesn't have an author.
Environmental News, 2009. That's true. They may not have authors on Environmental News, I'm not sure. So that could be, maybe the person needs to improve their citation a little bit. That could be true. Okay, I was actually tossing this in here as a legitimate piece of evidence because this would be a correct use of brackets. If this is actually a professor at Harvard University, it would be good to clarify his first name, his title, where he was from. And actually, I think it would be good to put in brackets what the study was entitled.
So it is a legitimate piece
of evidence? It's a fabricated piece of evidence, but it's a legitimate fabrication. Okay. Yeah, legitimate fabrication. Okay. You can only use fabricated evidence in debate lectures, not in actual debates. Right. So anyway, yeah. Okay. Anybody want to make comments about anything that we've talked about with evidence falsification either tonight or during Coach Vance's lecture? Points that you think you have questions about, something like that. What do you think?
Just a personal experience, this actually happened to me at Nationals where somebody thought I falsified evidence as a judge, and they brought it up, and I actually had to go before the NCFCA board, and it was probably the scariest moment of my life. So don't do that.
Whoa.
But what happened was in our 1AC, we didn't cite the evidence correctly and kind of almost put it as what would seem like a summary. So that's why, that's what happened, and that's what did it as a judge. So be careful if you're trying to change the piece of evidence to make it a bit better in your 1AC.
Yeah, and that's kind of one of the things where sometimes, trying to get that perfect 1AC word for word, language for language can create some problems. And the other thing is, boy, like Guthrie said, man, that was the scariest moment of your life is what he said. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, whoa, you never want to be in those shoes. Even if you're later, ruled to be whatever, innocent or whatever. So, but believe me, taking that risk is not worth it ever. Not even to get an extra hour of sleep so that you can close your 1AC out or anything like that. It's not worth it. Any other points, comments about this lecture or evidence? It is very cold. Yeah, I am kind of cold actually. Okay. I think we're good. So tomorrow, yes.
I finished up the 2A.
Okay. Let's close this off here. Tomorrow, I think everybody's going to be very excited because we're doing no research tomorrow.
Yeah.
At all.
That also means that we have to finish up tonight.
It means that the flip side of that for the pessimists are that you have to finish up tonight. Hopefully.